Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, August 27, 2015. Where is the time going? Quite a few topics to cover tonight, a few updates. The wing generator project continues in the background. That I don't have a firm date yet as the commercialization date, but things are looking, let's say this, much better than I ever imagined. That's, what can I say? It's going quite well. I want to thank everybody once again who contributed to the crowdfunding effort. And you can still contribute 50% of the profits that come from the sale from my webpage will go to the wing generator. This is an ongoing issue to go to that project, to get this thing up and running. And the 12-meter model, by the way, is very important. It's the model that I calculate will sell the most. It's the most useful around the globe. Small towns in rural areas, third world countries, second world countries, even first world countries, large ranches, eco-villages that want a nice, clean, quiet, and reliable source of energy. So anyway, that's in the works. I'm very happy with that. There's a big push today in the United States, especially, to push solar. And the elected officials, everybody that wants to run for office, they're all going, oh, they're going to support solar panels. Let me just explain it this way. Solar panels will simply become the way of the dinosaur someday. It will soak up all of the alternative energy money, making people think that everything's going to be great. And the power companies can call up you or anybody that owns solar panels, larger providers, etc., what they call solar parks, basically shut them off. They're going to have an intelligent controller, and the central power company will simply be able to call up en masse and tell you you cannot use your solar panels. You cannot link them into the grid. In Canada, they are already passing a law also that prevents any other than central power company power, so what you might call alternative energy, they're going to prevent them from connecting to the public unless they connect to the grid. They are just locking this baby down in all directions because they know what's going to happen. People are just going to, they want to get off the grid. They want to get off of this monster. In Canada, all the hydro, they produce a tremendous amount of hydro in Canada, that's being shipped off to the U.S., as is being done in many, many countries around the world. The hydro that's produced is not for the benefit of the local people. It's being shipped off by large corporations and being sold at wholesale rates to foreign countries. So the local people have to pay a premium for electricity. It's just, well, it's the bankers. It's the way they operate. Oh, and by the way, speaking of which, I'm going to migrate into this topic. The downturn of the stock markets. I just heard some yo-yo on international TV from the IMF, the International Monetary Fund. And these guys come on as so-called experts. Oh, the chatter that comes out of these guys, it just drone idiocy. That's the best you can say, because they really don't know what causes these. These are not economic cycles. In a sound economy, there are no economic cycles. The economy is long-term stable. So all of this fluctuation daily, or the dollar becoming extremely strong against foreign currencies, shooting up by record amounts on a daily basis, driving the businesses, the main international trading businesses, just driving them under. And so if you're in a, let me just explain it this way, economics 101. If you're in a foreign country, the dollar is going up compared to your local currency. The people who've been selling goods, they've been buying goods from the United States or other countries with the attachment to the U.S. dollar, they are buying goods and then trying to resell them. Okay, so say they bought last month and the dollar has increased relative to the value of that currency by 10, 20, 30% in the last month. When the local people try and sell those products, they don't have enough money left over to go back and buy more. It's simply driving them out of business. So the only thing they can do is sell off what they got, pocket the money, and they're out of business. So they're driving major businesses out of business all over the world. This is a planned event. And then also when you see the currency exchange changing by large amounts in the course of a day, 10, 15 times, on every upturn and downturn of those changes, the New York bankers, we all know who they are, make money because they have an 8-second lead on these changes. So when it goes zip up and 10 minutes later it goes zip down, they're making money on both those exchange rate changes. It's criminal because the monetary systems don't have the money, so they're extracting money at a record pace, storing it in their vaults, and basically robbing these countries of their livelihood and the people. A lot of hatred around the world against Americans, and rightfully so, because but you have to understand, these policies are driven by the world bankers. So the world becoming, as a side note, a very, very dangerous place to be. Okay, so anyway, enough of that. But the wing generator will be installed in many places around the world, except for a few prime locations. It's not going to be actively marketed in the United States. And that's because as soon as people realize the power that this has to actually replace central power companies, I don't know what they're going to do. But they're going to try and find some way to ban it. Because right now, they can shut off the three-blade wind generators at will. They don't produce any energy anyway. Many times when you see them spinning, it's the internal electric motor that's causing them to spin. So a total travesty of any reasonable, it's just insane what's going on here. And then solar only works a couple hours of the day. It's not a competitor for real energy solution. And that's why they're driving. I get angry at Greenpeace and those people because they really... they're promoting, say, for example, solar panels. It sounds wonderful, but the solar panels are not going to be a solution. The people that invest in them are going to be very angry when they're told they can't use them, and that's already happening. Okay, well, on to the next topic. Just a quick brief mention of carrot bars. Last week's show, I spent pretty much the whole show talking about them, so I will not spend any more show time in the future talking about carrot bars. I did edit last week's show. I put the edited version at the top of my homepage. So people that are interested in that, go see it. Go listen. I have a subpage that's dedicated to that. I'll just mention that this is a German company out of Stuttgart, Germany. And it was started by a man named Harald Zeitz. Actually, it was started around 2009, and it became a registered international corporation in 2011. But what he's doing is very simple. He's selling gold in bar quantities, gram quantities. In a gram of gold, it's a 32nd part of a troy ounce. So if you bought a Canadian maple leaf or a cougar ant or something like that, or an American eagle or whatever, golden eagle. The price of that is relative to the ounce of gold, and that's based on a troy ounce. A gram is 1/32 of an ounce, and so they're small quantities. The cost of a gram of gold is about, they're running anywhere from $35 to $50, depending on the fluctuations these days. But the trick here is that it's spendable. If you buy real gold, I'm not going to go into all of this detail. Like I say, just go to the webpage. But you can become an affiliate and have your very own gold business and also buy on a regular basis. So that's the short of it. I'll be talking more about that, reminding people in future shows, but no real extensive conversation. I've got quite a few topics from last week that I didn't have time to cover. So some of this coming out of the Schmooze News, there was a headline sent in by some people. They say there's a Godzilla El Nino coming, and that this is going to have all kinds of effects on our weather. But remember that El Nino is really misused, misunderstood by the standard meteorology community. The issue with El Nino, it's a heating of the Pacific Ocean, and I see these explanations where they're talking about, well, it's the wind wafting the waves from one part, building up the water in another part of the ocean, and I just see these explanations. I mean, it's so stupid. The El Nino, what it really is, it's a heating of the Pacific Ocean based on electromagnetic energy that comes down from the ionosphere. There's no underwater source of energy for the heating of the Pacific Ocean. And it literally has no effect on Atlantic weather seasons. And that's what they're trying to say. But anyway, the idea is they're trying to be important. They're trying to make a prediction, and they say they're expecting a Godzilla El Nino. The problem is, last year, there was an El Nino record rain season, but there was no heating of the Pacific Ocean. So it literally disproved this idea that somehow the heating of the Pacific Ocean is related to rainy seasons in Central South America along the equator or along the coastline. And that's where it originally started. So at any rate, you'll probably see a lot more about that, the expected Godzilla El Nino. Another topic, now, I just have to laugh at some of this. On July 23rd, I released my Hale Bopp Planet X Harrington Expedition update. And basically, what I identified was the fact that Planet X, the one that Harrington was looking for in 1991 and found, literally was the, you can hear that on my release, the July 23rd show. And so anyway, I made a big release on August 10th, just a few days later. There's a complete disinformation story that comes out, is actually gets published in a journal. And here's what it says. Now, they have discovered, astronomers have discovered many, literally thousands of planets outside of the orbit of Pluto. And these are, is quite a few of them, bigger than Pluto. The issue is that they're finding clumps of planets. And so they can't figure out why. In fact, they can't figure out why there should be any planets, let alone clumps of planets. So this joker comes up with the idea that, well, once upon a time, and he puts this, you know, it's like the Mother Goose nursery rhymes. Once upon a time, billions of years ago in the solar system, there was another planet. And it magically took all of these other planets that were out by Neptune and moved them out to where they are now. And in the interim, that planet kept going and went away and is now far, far away, where it can never, ever come back and hurt anybody at Earth again. Where they come up with this complete fabricated baloney. Well, and that's all it is, Tier 2. And they're cheering this guy because now they have something to say. It doesn't make any sense. And here's the part that is ridiculous. It's not provable. There's nothing there that can be verified. Things just magically move around. And I have to say also, when Carl Sagan and the boys got together to slam Velikovsky, they used the same excuse. Because really, Velikovsky, in the astronomical sense, had a very weak case for where this comet Venus came from. Later, I discovered that what happened is it was captured by Jupiter, but Velikovsky himself had a very weak story. He said it was born of Jupiter, that it just came kind of blasting out of Jupiter, and that Venus was born of Jupiter, and that's where the mythological story came from. And so he got criticized for that, and in a sense, rightly so. It was just speculation, unprovable. But now, to bolster standard astronomy, they're doing the same thing. But here's the funny part. The punchline is they're calling this the fifth planet. Now, it's kind of a little bit of trickery here in the shell game, because there are four big planets out there, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune. And so they're calling this the fifth big planet. They don't want to call it the tenth planet, because it would sound a little too much like, doggone it, Planet X. Oh no, they can't say that. They can't say anything like that. So they're calling it the fifth planet that somehow magically was there, then it went away. But isn't that the Planet X story, that there was another planet? And anyway, the idiocy that comes out of standard science just continues, without bounds. You know, there's something that I have to comment on also here. This woman that's the associate science editor of the Huffington Post, her name is Jacqueline Howard. You know, these people really are so lame. There's nothing worse than a completely idiotic editor of a science division of something like the Huffington Post or National Geographic or any of these. These people are complete idiots. They print whatever comes along, gee whiz story, all smiles, all Googles, you know. But the situation is they can't ask an intelligent question. You know, like, well, gee, why did this so-called fifth extra planet go away and has never come back? How exactly does that happen? In the mystery tour of the of this scenario, it boggles the mind. Anyway, enough of that. But these stories continue coming out of standard science. Every time a discovery is made, like 100 or 1,000 new planets, you know, it just doesn't fit their scenario, so they have to. They have to create some wild story that, and then once it gets published, it's like everybody's happy. Everybody can go back and collect their paycheck again. Here's an article sent in by a listener, and I wanted to comment on this. It says there are 10 incredible renewable energy solutions from around the world. And so this comes from a place called Anti-Media, which one would make an assumption has something to do with truth, honesty, and bringing you in some kind of correct information. But I wanted to mention a few of these. They talk about tire waste recycling, that you could take tires and there's 22 gallons of oil in every tire. Well, that sounds great, but what they're talking about is recycling these and bringing it back and somehow making gasoline or something. But these processes are more polluting than the just extracting 22 gallons of oil and the appropriate amount of gasoline from standard crude oil. You know, the litmus test that I have provided in my book, McCanny Wing Generator World Energy Project, is very simple. If you come up with some energy concept, number one, can it be done economically? But can it, this is the one true and only litmus test, can it somehow provide the world's energy needs? And if it can't, then what percentage of the world energy need can it actually provide? And this is just actually minuscule. It would take more energy to create something from the tires, which are really tremendously polluting. It would take more energy to extract whatever goodness you want to get out of these than you would actually benefit. So it's a negative ecological factor. There's another one here. I have to chuckle. But this one is meant, it's called a solar suitcase. And now the intention is very good here, that women around the world, many of them have babies, and they don't have proper medical attention or medical facilities. So the solar suitcase, the idea is to have medical facilities that can be powered by a solar suitcase. Well, solar only works even in the sunny parts of the world, in the tropics where there's a lot of poverty. The sun is only viable for about 5 hours of the day. The rest of the time, it's really not viable. Second of all, what if the woman happens to have her baby at night or at 6 o'clock when there's no sun? Then you're back to square one. You don't have any energy. This is not going to solve the world energy problems, and most likely you're not going to be able to get these in the hands of the poor people that are, you know, having babies on the street someplace. Once again, a nice idea, but is it going to really solve the problem? They say 800 women a day die because of the problem in the world of basically improper medical supplies and conditions for them to have babies. Well, that's, I understand that, and I empathize with that, and I would like to find a solution too. But the solar suitcase is probably not going to get into the hands. If they can't find medical facilities, how are they going to afford a solar suitcase with all the medical supplies in it? It's just, you know, it's not thinking correctly. I mean, the tremendous poverty in the world is going to prohibit this from getting into the hands or in the locales of the places where the women need it. The real solution is you got to get rid of the world bankers who are forcing the world, especially the third world, into absolute dire poverty. Then you can start solving these problems, like, you know, women not having proper facilities when they have their babies. I like this one, floating schools. It says in Bangladesh, the sea rising, the rising of the oceans is causing people to, the children not able to go to school. So they're going to float classrooms and have solar-powered boats pick up the students and bring them over to the boat where the school is being held. Anyway, once again, a good idea, but let's not run around in 8,000 directions trying to solve little individual problems and then overlook the main issue. The central power companies control the reins to the energy to the world. Nuclear, coal, and natural gas are the main sources, high energy content fuels. Let's look at a real solution that not only will solve the floating school problem in Bangladesh, not only solve the women who don't have a proper place to have their babies, and resolve the energy situation in the world for everybody, so that, you know, all of these problems would be solved. I get this comment all the time when I'm on radio shows talking about my wing generator, and they say, why haven't the powers that be been pounding your door down trying to get this technology out and funded? And, you know, somebody on my fundraising webpage said, with all of the junk that's being funded on this crowdfunding page, why is there not more support for McCanny in what he's doing here? This is a real solution. And, you know, the answer is that things that are not solution, not real solutions get funded. And I won't even go into some of the crazy ideas out there that got various, very serious levels of funding, but are just absolutely absurd. They're not going to work. They might produce a little bit of energy, but they're not going to solve anything, and they're not part of a comprehensive global plan to get the world off nuclear, coal, and natural gas for the main sources of energy, and it's certainly not aimed at getting people off of petroleum-based fuels for transportation. So at any rate, the basic issue, if something's going to work, it's not going to get attention. It's going to be pushed down to the bottom of the pile. And if something does not work or it has no chance of making any real changes, it's going to be promoted and put up in yellow neon lights all over the place. So that's going to distract people's attention. Very simply, the way things work. I'm going to switch gears a little bit here and talk about personal economics. And now, this is an important topic because I don't think many people out there really realize this. We're brought up in a world where from your very earliest ages, when you're a little kid, you know, you go to school, and at some point along probably about third grade, or, you know, maybe around eighth grade for some. But at some point, you have something called career day. And so everybody's supposed to go out and study a career. And people study dentistry and doctor and nurses and other things like that. And the whole idea is it's implanted in your brain at that young age that somehow you have to pick one thing to do with your life. And then when you get to be an adult, which it might be 18 years old after high school for some, or some might go to college or whatever, but at some point you get spit out into the real world. And at that point, you're supposed to pick a career. And so anyway, what does that do? That tells you kind of subliminally, not more than kind of, it kind of slams you over the head subliminally that you are going to do one thing, your income is going to come from one thing, and that's how you have to exist. So when the so-called job cycle or the economic cycles roll around and you lose your job, that's just the way it is. And you have to roll with the punches, retool, somehow come up and hope that you can get another job and continue with your life. And these economic cycles happen every 10 years, something like that. So therefore, you should be prepared to basically lose everything you've worked for over these 10 years or 15 years or whatever, get laid off, get another job, redefine your career, whatever. But the point is that sort of thinking is absolutely incorrect. And from your very youngest ages, instead of talking about career day, they should be talking about multiple streams of income. Everybody, I don't care who you are, should have multiple streams of income. If you put all of your eggs in one basket, your basket's going to break and all your eggs are going to break. Just the way it is. And especially in today's volatile world, it's more true than ever. So when you have multiple streams of income, that simply means that you have more than one way to make your living. And I'm not only talking about money, I'm talking about making a living in general. What do you need? You need a place to live that's clean and amenable with clean water and food and transportation and a way to manage communications, etc. And just a way to relax on a daily basis. Everybody needs these very simple amenities. They're not really amenities, they're necessities. So the entire concept of multiple streams of income is simply that. You should have many ways to make money. And at any given time, one of these might have to carry you. We're not taught that as kids. We're taught this single-threaded, get a career, get a job, that's what you do, that's where you make your money, don't ask any questions and just do it. That's what modern society is all about. If someone has a portfolio, they work to the point where they have extra, enough to save, they develop what you call a portfolio. In other words, you have various investments, and hopefully those investments, at least some of them, will pan out so you have something in the future. Portfolio means a variety of things, and so that's just one note. The other term I use, and actually these are terms I use for my own, defining my own life, is free living. Now, I'm sure you've heard of the term free energy, which implies that there's some people out there that claim, oh, you can just make this box, put it on a table, and it's going to develop energy and run forever and ever, and you can put a load on it. You can run your house or whatever, and this energy just flows right in. And that's a good concept, but that's not what I'm talking about. And when I say good concept, I'm saying that in jest, because literally there's no such thing as a free lunch, and there really isn't. But when I say free living, what that means is you have made an investment. Some kind of, you've worked hard, you've made an investment so that your water, food, and other necessities are basically already paid for. Now, if you work, your extra money is yours. It's yours to do what you want. And then you can expand, etc. But, or just basically save up so that when you retire, you can just keep living the same kind of carefree lifestyle. So free living does not mean that you're rich. It just means that you have what you need and comfortably need. I'm not talking about living in a cave with building a fire every day and one pan to cook out of. No, that's not a amenable existence. Having the amenities in life, the things that make it comfortable, are what you need. But basically, free living means that you have worked, so you have these items and you don't have to pay for them again. Once again, the entire design of society is that you have to work every week for your paycheck. You get interest to buy your house, you have interest to buy your car. And living is not free. It's very, very expensive. And so the whole idea is that, consuming energy, for example, changing energy into forms, creating automobiles, creating gasoline, creating food. Fertilizers come from ammonia, from petrol, etc. But free living, what does it really mean? It means you have invested, you have procured the resources necessary for you to live comfortably without running a 40-hour-a-week job as your only source of income. So you put those two concepts together. Combining those two concepts would allow you, and actually the majority of people, to live a fairly decent life. Now, without the obstruction, I would call it, of the 40-hour-a-week work concept. something that I've done myself. I've done that. And while I was doing it, I just realized, well, this is a necessity. You know, it was something at the time. And I was doing it more at a time when I needed insurance, because insurance was extremely costly, etc. But the actual situation with insurance is that it shouldn't be that all that expensive. But the bottom line is, even if you're working that 40-hour a week job, you shouldn't stop there. You should have other things going on so that if that falls by the wayside, which during your lifetime, 99.9% guaranteed, you're going to lose your job at some point and things are going to fall apart. So saving, being able to get out of the credit trap, very important, but having multiple streams of income, and then also free living, where the money that you make is not going to pay for your house or insurance or interest on the house or the car. Or, you know, the people become trapped in this credit trap in very young age, and they never get out their entire life. They are living under the bank's thumb or credit their entire life, and it's really not a fun way to live. So, two lessons of the day: multiple streams of income and free living. Have things paid for. And you know, when you first get out of college, don't go out and buy a big stereo system and get furniture on credit. Live with what you have, and try and get the big things taken care of first, like a place to live and a transportation, etc. And try and get those things paid for, so that eventually the money that you make is actually going towards you and your benefit to travel, to do things, whatever you like to do. Enough said. Those two concepts, that's kind of my economic recommendation of the day. Once again, multiple streams of income and free living, having your housing, your automobile, and your food and your water. Those big expenses that chew up your income, have those out of the way. Just a little bit of an example. If you buy a house on a loan over the course of 30 years, you're paying three times the amount for that house. That's your major expense in life for most people. So say you buy a $150,000 house, you're paying $300,000 in interest. I don't care if they're giving you a 1 or 2 or 3% loan or whatever. When you look at the amortization table, that's what you're doing. You're paying a huge amount in interest. So that money could have gone to you if you were able to pay that house off in a hurry. And so that's something that people, they buy plastic toys for the kids, all of the various things. If people just budgeted their money a bit better and paid off those major expenses quickly, you would have a lot more money to live on throughout your life. But that's not the American way. Okay, enough of that. My next topic is related somewhat to the wing generator project, but when we start electrifying our lives, whether it's automobiles or trains or buses or your whatever it is, we come up to the topic of storage of energy, storage of electrical energy. And of course, we're all familiar with batteries. There's something that's come out recently. It's called a supercapacitor. Now, in World War II, capacitors were used for all kinds of equipment, including radio equipment, etc., but also in the field, because electrical energy, stored electrical energy, and the ability to get a quick charge, so to speak, or a quick burst of electrical energy. Batteries are not that great because they have a relatively high internal resistance. So when a lot of current moves quickly in a battery, it heats up. Capacitors are not the same. They have a relatively low internal resistance. So therefore, they can be used to provide a burst of electrical energy. And here's the trick. A capacitor, the energy storage is proportional to voltage squared. Now, I've talked a little bit about this on previous shows, but tonight I want to concentrate on the comparison between batteries, capacitors, supercapacitors, various types of batteries, and then compressed air as methods of storing energy and then retrieving that energy to do useful work. What are the efficiencies? What are the comparisons? And so this is very important. Say you were building a wing generator system, and it creates, let's say, 600 volts of, and then with a certain current level, let's say it's putting out 20 kilowatts, and so every hour you'd get 20 kilowatt hours of energy. That's a measurement of energy, and you can store that. And so in a battery, for example, there's another rating of power called amp hours. How many hours can you run an amp of current and retrieve it from that battery? Well, and there's all kinds of, I don't want to explain all the mathematics here, but there's ways to associate these. In a capacitor, you have another measurement called a farad. A farad is literally a measurement of energy storage in the capacitor. Now, when I was going to college, etc., you'd have a 1/1000th of a microfarad or a capacitor, fairly large can, so to speak, but very small energy capacity. Now you have something the size of a D cell battery. It's a supercapacitor, and you could have hundreds of farads of energy storage in this, literally thousands of times more storage capacity than you did 20, 30 years ago. When compared to something like a lithium ion battery, the total amount of energy is considerably less for a capacitor. But with new materials, new technology, and new techniques coming along all the time, there is a belief, and it's partly my belief also, that the capacitors will approach and hopefully exceed battery capacity sometime in the next 5 years. Materials such as graphene is called. It's a form of graphite where literally graphite atoms are put, one sheet of graphite atoms is put on top of another sheet of graphite atoms. And with this, you can get extremely close tolerances, and then also the energy storage in the capacitor, because the plates are very close together, you're going to get extreme high levels of energy storage in a capacitor. And so with other tricks, etc., I consider that capacitors will be something we're going to start seeing and using in the future. But as I say, they don't have the storage capacity of a standard battery. Compare, say, a lithium-ion battery pack to your average automobile engine battery, that 12-volt battery, that big, heavy chunk of battery that is lead. It has a tremendous amount of lead in it, and what we call acid lead or lead acid battery. The deep cycle batteries are used, for example, in industry or in warehouses. You have, for example, a forklift that's run completely on batteries running around in a warehouse. I just saw an application of a supercapacitor, and they're starting to use these in conjunction with batteries. And here's the deal. You can charge up a supercapacitor very quickly. So in, say, you have a big bus, you put on the brakes, the electromagnetic motor, or the magnetic wheel motors, whichever it is, are used to brake. So the energy in braking, it's not from pads, friction running against the drum or the disc in a brake in the bus or the vehicle. You're actually using the electric motor in reverse to generate electric current, and then you're storing that in a battery. But now what they're doing is they're taking in that energy that comes back off the braking operation is being stored selectively in a supercapacitor. Why? Because it's very easy to charge up a capacitor, and then you can get that burst of energy back. They're fairly efficient. In other words, there's not a lot of energy loss here. So you brake, you put the brakes on the bus or the automobile. The energy of braking, in other words, slowing down the vehicle, goes into electricity, is stored in a supercapacitor. Now you want to accelerate and take off. You drive that energy back from the capacitor into the motor, the electric motor, and it goes back and it accelerates very quickly. So it's an interesting combination. It doesn't store that much energy, but then again, what it does is it relieves the batteries of accelerating and of that rapid acceleration in any vehicle. That's where a good portion of your energy is consumed, is in accelerating. Once you get up to speed, it doesn't take that much energy to maintain that speed. I don't care if it's an airplane or if it's an automobile or a train, a bus, car, whatever, a motorcycle. By the way, I just saw a video. There's a motorcycle called the Electric Zero, quite a famous, one of the first real hardcore replacement electric bicycle, replacement for a gasoline-powered motorcycle. And the reviews on this are pretty much rave. The acceleration, it showed, I saw a YouTube video of some guy riding an Electric Zero, and he pours on the juice and that baby just takes off. You have a tremendous amount of torque in electric motors. And so once again, you're going to see this becoming very common. Capacitors really don't weigh much. A lithium ion battery weighs less for the amount of energy stored. It weighs less than a lead acid battery. So the lithium ion batteries hold more energy per unit weight. The capacitors are very lightweight, but if you built up a capacitor bank that had the same energy storage as a lithium ion battery pack, the capacitors would still weigh more. So anyway, per pound, per kilogram, whatever you want to measure, the batteries still store more energy. And then now let's just compare to the good old standard gasoline. None of the technologies available today, let's look at lithium ion batteries, the best batteries that are available. Those are the ones in your telephone, in your camcorder, in the Tesla automobile. They're in the form of a little round can, about 2.5 inches long by about 3/4 inch in diameter. And if you, a lot of people don't know this, when you have a battery, say, in your computer, in your laptop, that battery is made up of many little cells, cylindrical cells put together inside. And they're very standard, and that builds up the battery pack in your computer. Okay, now I'm going to switch off to compressed air. And compressed air is probably on the equivalent as far as energy storage. It's about the equivalent of the capacitors. The one thing about compressed air is you can't get the energy back as fast as with a capacitor. It's more on the order of a battery. There's a limit to the let's say the velocity of return of energy on devices. So there are all these factors that one has to weigh when you're building what you might call alternative energy useful devices, such as motorcycles, automobiles, trains, buses, etc. Or work equipment, or work equipment for in the field. They're starting to build ATVs, all-terrain vehicles, these little four-wheel jobs that you ride around in the woods, and they're starting to build those with complete electric capability. In other words, there's no gasoline motor at all. So very capable in terms of the charge going equivalent to a tank of gas. It's really the same. You can also carry extra batteries with you to give extended range. But most people don't go the full range of the vehicle. Electric bicycles, this has been a big advancement, and then motor scooters. Electric bicycles are getting the range up to 100 miles. Very impressive, where you can go 40 miles an hour and then run it for like 3 hours off this battery pack. Truly amazing. So bringing a bicycle and all-terrain bicycles, electric bicycles into the market. The big fat tire bicycles, a very comfortable ride, etc. And the prices are coming down. It used to be there were $6,000. The Saunders bicycle that was on the crowdfunding, did very well crowdfunding, for about $600 plus shipping from China, where they're built. But all of this due to the fact that battery technology has advanced greatly. The motors have been around for quite a long time, very high quality motors. But even that technology is increasing. It's becoming much more common, much more readily available. But okay, back to compressed air. One of the problems with compressed air is getting the energy back out. When you let compressed air out of a small tube, the expanding air cools, and that's one of the problems. If you have any water vapor in the air, you have a problem of freezing, and it actually can freeze up to where the air won't come out. And so anyway, that's a little bit of a problem. But the other, and so that limits you. How much energy can you get out of compressed air in a certain amount of time? And of all of these, the supercapacitor is the one that'll deliver the boost of energy the fastest. It's the one that is going to give you a real boost of energy, electrical energy. And so it's being combined, like I say, you're going to see these probably pretty soon in electric motorcycles, electric bikes, etc., because of the ability when you brake and you're using the electric motor to brake, not friction pads, but you're literally using the electric motor to brake, and you're sending that energy of motion, you're converting it into electricity, sending it back into the battery pack using supercapacitors instead. So all of this technology really, really coming to fruition. And the beauty of this is that as soon as we have an energy source, namely the wing generator, online, all of a sudden we'll be able to start running these devices with a clear conscience. Right now, if you have an electric automobile, electric car, whatever, electric motorcycle, whatever it is, you're still getting your power from the electrical central power station, which is running nuclear or coal or natural gas. It's divided about 33% in each division. That's where you're getting your energy from. It's really a terrible conversion. You're getting about 1% efficiency out of burning that nuclear fuel or coal or whatever. Terrible, terrible inefficiency. You're really better off running, if you're ecologically minded, if that's why you're doing this, you'd be much better off just running a gasoline motor. You'd be polluting far less doing that than running an electric bike. And a lot of people don't understand this. They think they're doing something great for the ecology, for the environment, when they're running electric vehicles. And until we get real sources of energy in, namely the wing generator, even with solar, there's a problem. A lot of people don't identify what we call the front-end pollution. In building solar panels, there's a tremendous pollution factor that has to be overcome. And there again, technology might be increasing in the future. But, you know, I'm very impressed with solar. In fact, I literally use solar myself for some applications. I use solar in my personal application. I use solar to keep my batteries topped off when I'm not there. I don't let my wind generators run when I'm not there. The reason being is if you have a bad storm move in, you could have some damaged equipment. Whereas the solar, you don't need much energy to top off your battery pack every day. So I use solar for that, and I just have a small solar panel, and it's a small amount of energy, but it's sufficient because if you let your batteries drain, they're going to go bad. So to do that, I shut off my wind generator systems because I'm not using a lot of power, and I just keep the batteries topped off with solar. So everything has its use, but solar is not what we need for wide-scale bulk production of electricity. So anyway, I hope this discussion has been a little bit informative. Once again, the major forms of storage, lead-acid batteries, and the very good deep-cycle, industrial-grade lead-acid batteries, there's really nothing better. In fact, now what they're doing, they've made so many advances. Remember that the batteries used to go bad every 3 or 4 years. Now they're producing the lead acid batteries, and they have a technique where you reverse the current and you send in a high voltage pulse in the opposite direction. It burns the sulfur off of the plates, and the sulfur that accumulates in the bottom of the battery puts that back into solution, and that's what used to kill the battery, was you would have crystallization of sulfur from the sulfuric acid. You'd have crystallization of sulfur in the battery pack itself, and that would start to short out the plates, and then the battery went bad. Well, that doesn't happen. If you take care of your batteries now, you can easily get 10 or 12 or 15 years out of your battery pack. Something very interesting. So, of course, lithium ion. One thing I didn't mention was a sodium ion. There's a new technology that I hope is developed. The basic theoretical work and the basic laboratory work has been done in place of lithium using sodium. And so then the supercapacitors, compressed air, as a form of retrieving energy. All we need now is the wing generator. That's coming online nicely. We're going to see those commercialized models rolling off the assembly line very soon. Remember, go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. That's 7 letters, JMCC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.com. And when I was talking about multiple streams of income, I think that everybody, in fact, I'm very impressed with the response of my listeners to the carrot bars. Many, many people have joined. It's really a smart thing to do. All the information is on my webpage, plus all of the other issues going on there, plus just the basic science issues. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.